Welcome to the Transformational Leadership Podcast. This is your host, Hannah Anam. My mission is to help you lead more effectively and be an agent of positive change in times of disruption. On this podcast, we interview practitioners and leadership experts and have coaching exercises that you can apply immediately to your work challenges. Together, we learn how to achieve success and create workplaces in a world that work better for all. Welcome, everybody. I am excited today to have Bill Joyner join us. Bill Joyner is a senior leadership and organizational development consultant, executive coach, and he has several decades of experience in the field. He earned his doctorate in this field at Harvard University and is the lead author of Leadership Agility, a book that I highly recommend. He's considered a global thought leader on this topic. Welcome, Bill, to our podcast.
Thanks, Hannah. It's a real honor and pleasure to be part of the series.
I wanted to reach out to you, Bill, because this current pandemic situation that we're in times of such high ambiguity, unpredictability, and I imagine it has a huge impact in terms of, you know, our ability to be agile as leaders. So can you talk a little bit about how you think about leadership agility?
Sure. And I would just start by saying that we've been having a number of conversations with coaches at our network. We train coaches in the Leadership Agility 360, and we've trained over 400 coaches around the world. We've been having conversations with them lately about how the pandemic is affecting their work and how they're adjusting. And almost to a person, everybody is saying that they're finding leadership agility to be even more relevant during this time. So maybe I'll try to explain why that is. There's a core practice. There's several types of agility, leadership agility. There's different levels. There's different arenas in which you can play it out as a leader. But at the core of every one of those is a practice called reflective action. And basically, it's when a leader, as we all do, leaders get very absorbed in their leadership tasks. Leadership agility happens when they're able to step back mentally and gain a larger perspective on what's going on and then take insights from that perspective and translate that into their next action. So it's a cyclical process like that. And I think what's happening in this pandemic is an exaggerated form of what happens to all of us when we get under stress. Doesn't just come and go, but it lingers and lingers. And that is the automatic tendency, I think, is to hunker down, put your nose to the grindstone, essentially close down so that you can focus. And turns out that that's actually counterproductive in the kind of business environment that we're in today, where everything is changing so fast and everything is so interconnected, meaning we have to really work well with our stakeholders. So what reflective action does, it means kind of going against the stream of automatic reactions to find more and more opportunities to step back and sort of look at things afresh. And that's opening up more to yourself and what you're thinking and feeling. It's opening up more to other people and what they're thinking and feeling. And I'll get into more examples of that later, I think. But just say that the most agile leaders that we find, we've worked with, that we've studied, are ones that can do this reflective action process sort of at will. And when they step back in a way that's deeper and broader. The perspective they gain is compared to less agile leaders, they can do it more quickly and they can do it more often. So I think the pressure of the pandemic is to take us away from agility. And yet I think agility is really a big part of the antidote to what we're going through right now.
And does your research suggest a link between agility and effectiveness?
Absolutely. I mean, what we found is that the more agile the leader, and we have a spectrum of different levels of agility in the leadership agility framework, the more agile they are, the better they are able to be effective in the highly complex, rapidly changing environments like the one we live in. And this is the pandemic is only heightening all this. We also have research that from our Leadership Agility 360 that shows that leaders who were perceived as being the most agile are also perceived as the most effective. So there are very strong links there.
Oh, that's great. So tell us a little bit about this notion that you were talking about, which is this perspective taking, the ability to take a step back from the action and then step back into the action. The most agile leaders that have, I imagine, very demanding days, what are some things that they can do that are real practical tips that help them incorporate that into their demanding day?
I think that some of the simple things to do to build this reflective action capacity and kind of schedule in some breaks and find opportunities to take just short breaks. And if you have to be on the screen a lot, if you're like producing documents and that kind of thing, to put yourself on a timer and just every 15 minutes to stand up and move around for a minute. There's scientific research that shows that sort of resets your brain, which otherwise starts kind of shutting down if you're sitting for a long period of time. I have a client company, a software company, where the executive team and other levels of management, they have a practice where they're ending their meetings 5 minutes early. It's giving yourself a chance to kind of let go of what you've been preoccupied with so that you can really engage in what's coming next. And they also, they have a practice of just the first 2 minutes of a meeting is basically quiet time so people can arrive and let go of what they were preoccupied with. So those are kind of very simple forms of reflective action. There are more intentional forms we can get into as we go through this conversation.
Yeah. In this current environment that we're in, I find that a lot of my clients are fairly close to burnout. And resilience is so important.
Yeah.
So is there a connection between resilience and agility?
Yeah, there's a strong connection. I talk about this a little bit toward the end of the book, but I see resilience as basically the emotional dimension of agility. And in terms of practices that can help you build resilience, I think that reflective action does that to a certain extent. I have a colleague named Sandy Davis who developed this simple but powerful methodology for building resilience. And he built it out of his own personal experiments. And what he advocates is that if you really want to build your resilience, you need to get three practices going in your life. And they don't have to take much time. But one of them is what he calls a centering practice, or we could call a mindfulness practice of some kind. That helps you to clear and refresh your mind. And then, of course, an aerobic practice that is well known to help build personal resilience. And then the third practice that he's somewhat unique in stressing is what he calls a creative practice. And the way he thinks of it is that you need to pick something that you're going to do simply for the fun of it. You're not doing it to get good at it. Like I picked learning to play the piano, which I never did. I mean, I never learned.
We're going to have you play a sonata for us at the end of
right.
this.
right. Well, it's like building a little bit of joy into your day, which is better than none.
Great, great. So that means I now have license to dance to my favorite ABBA songs.
Absolutely.
A day. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So can you share some examples of what has happened in terms of impact inside of an organization for a leader who is actually able to build some, as you call it, reflective action into their day? And what's the impact of that on themselves? What's the impact of that on their teams?
Yeah. Well, I can think of a healthcare executive that I had a coaching relationship with. We used the Leadership Agility 360 and got his feedback. And one of the things he wanted to work on, he had just been promoted to the executive ranks, and he knew he needed to be more strategic than he had been. But he really felt he had no time for strategic thinking because he was just inundated. And we know many people can relate to this, to being in the situation. But what he realized as we began the coaching was that the reason he didn't have the time he needed to be strategic had a lot to do with the way he managed his team. So he led his team in a way that did not encourage joint problem solving, but rather sort of one-on-one supervision. And as he began to change that and started to put agenda items on the table that required everyone to participate in solving issues that were really cross-departmental issues, there was a transition process in doing that where they got to the point where they could very well take on these kinds of issues, and to the extent that he could even say, okay, here's the issue. I'm going to go now meet with one of my executive peers and discuss strategic matters. I'll come back and get your recommendation. So it was a whole different way of leading his team that had ripple effects, not only with his team, but you know, the way his team interacted with the rest of the organization, the way he contributed at the executive level. The core practice that he was using during our coaching relationship was reflective action. He was a kind of a shoot from the hips kind of manager when we started. And he began to find more and more opportunities to step back and get a larger perspective. And he began to call this the pause. I remember he was describing just one example of this. And he said, well, I was on my way to this meeting that I hadn't really had time to prepare for very much. But while I was walking down the hall to the meeting, I did the pause. And I said, and what happened? And he said, well, I just sort of stepped back mentally and questions came to me like, well, what do I really want to accomplish in this meeting? What do I want the outcome to be? The kind of thinking that comes from reflective action is one that takes you beyond the highly tactical orientation that he had. So he would think things would pop into his mind like, what do I really want to accomplish in this meeting? What do I want the outcome to be? Whereas before, he would just plow into the meeting.
Great. And in your book, you talk about four types of agility. Can you tell us a little bit more about each of the types of agility and how to practice it?
If we take an example of somebody, a leader who is leading an organization change project, for example, the first one is context setting agility. So this is when you step back and doing reflective action. Each of the compass points is really a different way to focus your attention when you're doing reflective action. So in context setting agility, you're stepping back and you're looking at and articulating the larger context. And some questions that are really helpful in getting you to do that are, what is the need for change? What is the scope of the change? In other words, what is in and what's out of things that could be changed, which is an often overlooked but very important question. And what are the intended outcomes? The least agile managers tend to just plow ahead without asking those questions. These will increase your agility in the way you set the context for a change. And then there's stakeholder agility, which in this case, you're stepping back and you're taking the perspective of the stakeholder. And you're, first of all, asking yourself, well, who are the key stakeholders? Which are the ones I really need to be in conversation with? And then what are their perspectives on my project? Do they see it as a threat? Do they see it as an opportunity? Could they care less? What pressures are they under? What incentives do they have? What's in it for them? And that sort of bleeds over to the third question of stakeholder agility, which is, given that we inevitably have differences with our stakeholders, how can I forge a real alignment between us so that we are mutually committed to supporting this project?
One of the questions I have around mutual commitment, this is an area where now that we recognize, particularly the higher up you go inside of organizations, there's a lot more influencing that happens with peers. The boundaries are a lot less defined, and you're having to influence peers, and that your work is actually dependent on being able to get alignment with peers who may have very different objectives or priorities.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about how do the most agile leaders, how are they able to build this sort of joint commitment or create, as you said, create conditions for joint commitment or mutual commitment?
Mm-hmm. How about if I tell a story that sort of illustrates that?
That would be perfect.
Okay. So I'm thinking about a call center manager who is a real nose to the grindstone manager who was sort of became the go-to person, did everything that was asked and burned themselves out, but unexpectedly got promoted to a new job where they We're implementing the company's new, what they call knowledge capture strategy in product development, meaning they were going to get information from product development managers on what they were learning in the course of developing new products so that they could improve the whole product development process. So this was something that this guy was excited about, but also anxious about, because he had no authority over the people he had to get this information from. But he dove in and he had a launch meeting with the senior product managers, and he laid out the project and what he needed from them. And they came back with nothing but skeptical questions, criticism. And the more he tried to advocate the why this is so important to the corporation, ultimately they walked out of the room. It was just the complete opposite scenario. It was sort of his nightmare scenario, I guess you would say. And so he turned to a leadership coach. The coach asked him some questions about the situation. And he said, well, what outcome do you want? And he said, well, I want them to commit to giving me the information that I need to get do this project. And the coach said, just as you said, Hannah, you know, well, you and they have different objectives, different incentives. So what is your objective or your outcome that you want for the relationship between the two of you around this? And he said, well, I guess what I really need is we need to be committed to each other's success. Well, that was a big reframe, right? For just right there, because this leader was not thinking of us so much as himself and what he needed to accomplish. And he was getting a corresponding reaction.
What I'm hearing you say is the accelerator question that the coach asked is, what are your goals for the relationship? Is that right?
That was one of the key questions that the coach asked. Yeah.
So it's the idea is to get somebody to think bigger than just their goal, right?
Yeah.
It's to go from the me and my goal to what is our goal, or what's at stake for each of us and both of us.
Right. Right. How could we take both of our perspectives into account, which is a step in the direction of what you were asking about, is how do you get mutual commitment? So the next thing was, coach says, well, what do you think that they need to feel from you? What do they need you to do in order to for them to take the stance that this is a relationship worth investing in? So once he kind of made that middle shift, he said, well, I guess I'd want somebody who really listened to what's going on in my world and who could understand it and who could negotiate, who had some flexibility to work out something that would work for both of us. So that was kind of the mindset that he shifted to. And then he went back and he decided to start with the senior product manager who was maybe the least resistant of the group, and to meet with him and his team. And he basically went in there and apologized. He said, I think we got off on the wrong foot. I should have listened to what you had to say and developed a better understanding of what's going on with you guys. So I want to do that now. And he listened for like 30 minutes and, you know, just asking clarifying questions and active listening. And at the end, he sort of summed up, well, here's what I'm hearing, and tested that with them. And basically, the biggest issue for them was time. And they did some creative thinking sessions. And basically, they were solving the problem of how do we get the knowledge capture done in a way that's as efficient as possible and demands, as little as possible from the people who are doing the ongoing work. And that was very successful.
Thank you for taking that detour, because I think that so many of us, as we're working across organizations and in influencing roles, this notion of how do I work with my stakeholders becomes really important for us. So talk a little bit next. I think we talked about context setting agility and stakeholder agility. We're getting into the other forms of agility that your book talks about.
Yeah, so the other two types of agility are creative and self-leadership agility. Now, creative agility is really for when you get into the details of trying to solve the problem at hand. So this story I just told gives you an example of that. They had sort of figured out what the biggest obstacle was, and they had taken into account both perspectives of this leader and the product managers. And so that's the first question that I would ask in creative agility is really, what is the issue we need to address? But then to be able to go through and identify root causes of the problem and what are the criteria for a good solution. So that's not saying what is the solution. That's saying, and in this case, it was something that would capture knowledge and take as little time as possible. Those were the primary criteria they were working with. So that way they weren't working just from one perspective or the other. They were working from a combined perspective. So those are the key questions I think are most helpful for creative agility. Of course, there are a number of techniques that you can use to put that into practice. Then self-leadership agility is this time the focus is on yourself. And I find that this is the most overlooked of the four types of agility, just because we're also focused on getting things done outside ourselves. It's about getting feedback. It's about experimenting with new mindsets and behaviors. So some of the key questions are, what is my edge as a leader right now? What's a practice or a couple of practices that I want to commit to just doing over and over until I get really good at it?
Yeah. So this is a great question that you just asked, which is, what is my edge mm-hmm. as a leader right now? And, mm-hmm. you know, a leader, I imagine, who is spending, you know, 8-10 hours a day right now, just trying to solve the problems of their business, how do they get a clue about what is their growth edge? What's a question or a series of questions that they can ask themselves mm-hmm. that gives them a sense of, aha, this is an area where there might be a growth opportunity for me?
I think a good approach is to say, you've got to carve out a little bit of time, right? Like 30 minutes. And think back over the past, whatever the relevant period of time is, the past month or two, and say, where have I been the most frustrated? Where have I felt there might be a way to do something differently, but I'm not sure what it is yet? These would be specific interactions you've had with maybe with your boss, with stakeholders, with meetings you've had that didn't go quite the way that you would hope they would. And you're willing now to say, okay, well, that may be partly due to other people, partly their fault. But what I want to focus on is, what part of this is my contribution? Because this is what I can control. And this is really, really the most empowering question to ask, is not what did they do wrong, but what could I have done differently? So I think that's a starting point. And
that's such a powerful shift, Bill.
Yeah.
Because I think so many of us, we get stuck in this place of, if only John would change his behavior, things would be much better.
Right. And we all have many, many Johns in our life.
We have a lot of difficult Johns in our lives. And so, yeah, I think that's such a pivotal question that we just need to maybe get into the habit of asking ourselves is, what's my role in this difficult situation that I'm in?
Yeah. So, and in choosing something to work on, I think it's important that it be something, not just something you feel like you should do, but something you want to do. Getting really specific. I want to be a better listener. Okay, that's a good start. What does that look like? What are the primary relationships that you want to be practicing this in? You know, kind of drill down some so that you actually have an action plan for what you want to do. And then it's important to have some kind of reminder system. Some people, you know, will make a note in their calendar around certain meetings that this is, listen. Or it may be that, well, an additional thing to do is to have someone that you trust who have some line of sight into your behavior. Maybe they're in some meetings with you that you can check in with every once in a while and have a short conversation. Well, I'm working on this listening thing, and you know what that means to me. How did I do? Where was I listening well, and where did you think I wasn't? So that's another kind of reminder system that you can have.
Have you seen organizations either have learning circles or accountability partners? What seems to be working out there that you've seen?
Well, a couple of things come to mind. One of them is what can you do to provide a a reflective environment for other people. For example, your direct reports. Do you take time to not only talk about what got accomplished this week and what needs to be done next, but do you spend some time with them coaching them? Or, you know, for example, the questions that I laid out for types of agility are all, can all be coaching questions for direct reports.
One of the things that was fascinating to me that I read in your book is that you actually had some data around the levels of development of leaders around each stage of development. Can you briefly talk to the stages of development and your data around it? And what kind of leaders do we need now in our workplaces? And do we have enough of them?
The short answer is no, but let me back up to talk a little bit about, these stages of development, which I call levels of leadership agility. It turns out that there are well-researched stages of personal development that can be assessed. So you can use that in research. And then you can look at, do the leaders at different stages of development lead differently? And they lead very differently. So the levels that are most relevant to today's managers are what I call expert, achiever, and catalyst. And expert leaders are very tactical. Both of the story examples that I shared are leaders are experts who became achievers, which is the second level. Achievers are focused on outcomes. They're strategic. They're more able to work with stakeholders and have a give and take with them. They see leadership as motivating people, not just using your authority and expertise. And then we have the catalyst leaders, which are the rarest and the ones who are most successful in today's environment and who are least likely to burn out, going back to resilience. Catalyst leaders do all the things that achiever leaders do. In other words, they set strategic objectives, they put plans in place to achieve them, they monitor the work, etc., and they try to get the support of stakeholders. Catalyst leaders are working on a sort of an additional level in the sense that they are, while they're implementing the current strategy, they're trying to develop an organization that has certain capacities that few organizations have. Primarily the capacity to sense and respond to any new strategic development that may arise in the larger environment. And the catalyst leaders that we studied and we work with, to a person, were working on developing a unique kind of corporate culture, or what I call leadership culture. In other words, what people are who are in leadership positions are expected to be like, that is characterized by high levels of participation, empowerment, collaboration, straight talk, because they felt that to have a truly agile organization, a sustainable organization, this culture, regardless of whatever structures and systems may also be needed, that this kind of culture was essential. And they began their change work with working with their team of direct reports and transforming that team into one that embodied the culture so that they could really authentically lead the change and not just delegate it to HR as a culture change or say, this is something other people should do, which is so right. Common, as we know. So those are some of the characteristics.
Yeah. What I was hearing you say is that it sounds like the folks who are the catalyst leaders have a deep passion for perhaps growing people and organizations that probably got them where they are today. I don't know. How do people move from an achiever to a catalyst? How does that growth happen?
Yeah, well, it's a big question. I would say that if you look at the core practice of reflective action, the nature of reflective action shifts as you go to catalyst and is really the driver of all the changes that take place. And that is, you add to a strong reflective capacity that you have as an achiever, an ability to look forward and backwards and make connections between things. You add to that an ability to be aware of things that are happening more or less in the moment. So these could be feelings you hadn't recognized before. They could be assumptions you're making you hadn't recognized before. They could be behaviors that you hadn't been aware of. You get very curious about these aspects of yourself, both strengths you may have overlooked and limitations you may have overlooked. And by developing this degree of reflective action and then applying it in the four types of agility that I've described, that begins to open up all the cognitive and emotional capacities that a catalyst leader has. That is what really is what fuels the behavior I was describing.
Yes. And so it seems like this reflective action that is happening for a catalyst leader is almost happening on an ongoing basis in the present moment, rather than let me, you know, try to take the pause before I walk into a meeting. It's sort of like the frequency of it and the immediacy of it is sort of happening in the present moment. Am I getting that?
That's right. I mean, it doesn't preclude using the achiever level reflective action of before and after, but it's now you're catching something during. So for example, if you, let's say you go into a meeting and you say, well, what I want to do is create a very participative meeting here. That's your intent. Then you realize partway through the meeting that you've been droning on, and it's not a very participative meeting. And using that catalyst level awareness of being able to step back while these things are happening and readjust yourself, you can then have a different kind of meeting, as opposed to leaving the meeting and going, oh, gee, I guess it wasn't very participative, and I think I had a lot to do with that. As you do that kind of before and after reflective action more and more, you kind of get closer and closer to the present moment. And then you can intentionally start developing this ability to catch things as they happen.
Beautiful. I love that example, by the way, because it happens to so many of us.
Yeah.
Tend to listen better or whatever it is that we want to do. And then we find ourselves, you know, back in the potholes. But, you know, the whole idea about being present now and just recognizing when you're about to step into the pothole and preventing yourself or quickly recovering. That's really the key. Beautiful. Thank you. I really, really appreciated that example. I would love for our listeners to learn more about how they can either follow your work or where would you direct them?
Well, one place is to go to my website. My company's name is ChangeWise, WISE, and the website is changewise.biz, B-I-Z. The Leadership Agility book is available on Amazon, and that is always the quickest and fastest way to get the book. But if anyone wants to reach out to me personally, and I would encourage anyone who wants to do that, email me. And my email is bj, for Bill Joyner, at changewise.biz.
And I so enjoyed connecting with you, Bill, and you have such a deep understanding of these leadership capabilities and what it actually takes to be an agile leader that I look forward to continue to learn from you, Bill.
Well, thank you, Hannah. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you. And I want to wish you the best on your new book project.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. This is your host, Hannah Anand. Please rate, comment, and share our podcast with those you care about. Be the leader who helps others grow and thrive in times of disruption. You can visit our website at www.transformleaders.tv. There, you'll find other great tools to grow your leadership and be a force for good in these times. Until the next time, my friends.